भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। From Srimad Bhagavatam 10th Canto, Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchukunda, Text Number 50. Purarataihema pariskritaischaran Purarataihema pariskritaischaran Matam gajaiva naradeva samgita Matam gajaiva naradeva samgita Sa eva kalena durajjayena te Sa eva kalena durajjayena te Kaleva rovit krimi basma samgita Kaleva rovit krimi basma samgita Purarataye hema pariskritai charan Matanga jayeva naradeva samgita Sa eva kalena durajjayena te Kaleva rovit krimi basma samgita Ratai in chariots Hema with gold Pariskritai furnished Charan riding Matam, fierce, Gajai, on elephants, Va, all, Naradeva, king, Sangita, named, Sa, that, Eva, same, Kalena, by time, Duratjayena, unavoidable, Te, your Kalevara, body, which, as feces, krimi, worms, basma, ashes, samgita, name. Translation. The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots, adorned with gold and is known by the name king, is later, by your invincible power of time, called feces, worms, or ashes. Purport. In the United States and other materially developed countries, dead bodies are cosmetically disposed of in a tidy, ceremonial way. But in many parts of the world, old, sickly, and injured people die in lonely or neglected places where dogs and jackals consume their bodies and transform them into stool. And if one is so blessed as to be buried in a coffin, one's body may very well be consumed by worms and other minuscule creatures. Also, many earthly cadavers are burnt and thus transformed into ashes. In any case, death is certain, and the ultimate fate of the body is never sublime. That is the real purport of Muchukunda's statement here, that the body, though now called king, prince, beauty queen, upper middle class, and so on, will eventually be called stool, worms, and ashes. Sri Sridhar Swami quotes the following Vedic statement. Yone sahasrani bahuni katva dukena lapva pi chamanu sattvam sukavaham yena bhajanti vishnum devai manushyatmani sat. Through Bhutaha, after passing through many thousands of species and undergoing great struggle, The conditioned living entities finally obtain human form. Thus, those whose human beings who still do not worship Lord Vishnu, who can bring them real happiness, have certainly become enemies of both themselves and humanity. Purārtai hema pariskritais charan matam gajai va naradeva sangita sa eva kalina duratyayena te kalevaro vikrimibhasma sangitaha. Translation again. The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots, adorned with gold and is known by the name king, is later, by your invincible power of time, called feces, worms, or ashes. Omma gyanati mnandasya gnanjana salakaya shaksumritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nama om vishnupadaya krishna prasadpade shrimati bhakti vidanda swami niti namne. Namaste sarasati devi gauravani pracharine nivise sasanyavadi basachade shatarine. Actually, the Shastra, like in the Bhagavatam, give us the truth about life. It's not often that things are sugar-coated. Things are presented as it is. Although in poetic terms, but it's presented as it is. But in the mature world, often things are covered over. People like to put cosmetic over things that seems to be unpleasant. It's just like if people have some scars or whatever, they try to put some cosmetic over to cover it over. Or if they have wrinkles, they put some cream to try to lessen the effects of the wrinkles. Everything is cosmetically done. And often people like to talk about life. And they will try to avoid the topic of death because it's something unpleasant. But we know from the Bhagavatam, birth, death, old age, disease, these are facts of life. These are facts of life that we have to know about and has to be dealt with. But in the material, it's like the proverbial ostrich. They stick their head under the ground, and oh, now it's gone. The problem is gone, my enemy is gone, I don't see it, so it's gone. So in this way, they try to put away, although they think, oh, birth is so nice. Of course, they don't see what the baby has to go through in the womb of the mother. They like everything to be lovey-dovey. Oh, how cute. After the baby is born. But what the baby goes through in the womb is described in the third canto of Bhagavatam. The worms are there biting. Sometimes the mother may not be careful, eating something too sour, too hot, too spicy. And the baby is cringing. And worst of all, nowadays, they continue smoking, drinking, taking drugs, and the baby in the womb is completely stoned out by the time it comes out from the womb. So although people may like to think, oh, everything is so lovey-dovey, so cute, but actually it's not at all so cute. And if someone is sick, quickly they put them into a hospital, put them away from the glare of society. Old age, put them in the old folks' home. And death, as is described here in the purport, decorate them nicely before the funeral ceremony. Even people who have accidents, they try to patch up the body as best as they can. That's why they have this funeral parlor, they're expert to fixing up the dead bodies and put cosmetic so they look somewhat decent even in death. So everything is just cosmetically covered up to make people feel, oh, everything is nice. Nice ceremony. And in this way, people do not think deeper into the facts of life or the problems of life. In this way, people do not have to think about these things. Because if they start thinking about this, they will end up becoming Hare Krishna. And that will be a problem for the society. I think who is going to run this machinery, this big machinery? Because after all these educational, the whole educational system is to just churn out people to fit into this big machinery. It looks like working. To keep the whole machinery going. So, as you stated in the Purport, in the Western world, or in the more developed countries, they will cover up all these things, and normally we don't see. We don't see all this so much death going on, old age, disease. It's all put away in different institutions. But in the third world country, these are glaring facts of life. Sometimes the dead bodies, often dead bodies are not dealt with in a very, very ceremonious way. They're very unceremoniously dumped. For example, in certain places, for example, during the Bosnian genocide, people were killed. In groups, they were just killed and dumped in a shallow cave, or they just throw them in the dumping ground like garbage. And they just the bodies are just piling up and become food for jackals and dogs or whatever animals eat dead bodies. So it's not a very beautiful thing. So, as in the Prabhupada, the ultimate fate of the body is never sublime. Although in life, people tend to put so much time and energy in taking care of this body. But what does Vasudev say in the Bhagavatam? When Kamsa was trying to kill Devaki, and Vasudev was trying to stop Kamsa, he said, actually this body, what is it made of? Made of blood, stool, spleen, mucus, what else?
Bones.
All this nice, but it's covered in a nice package called the skin. So everything is nicely packed. But once you just cut off and all these things start falling out, then it's not a very pleasant sight. Now think about it. If the body is actually so valuable, the ingredients is so valuable, why is it packed in such a thin package, such a thin covering? Would you walk around with $1 million in a thin plastic bag and walk around the street carrying $1 million in a thin plastic bag, which if someone just cut a little bit and all the money just start falling out? But this is what this body is about. All these ingredients of the body is nicely packed in a thin package called the skin. And when you just cut, everything starts oozing out. Sometimes people do not like when we talk like that. And they think, ooh, this is too gruesome. Let's talk about Bhagavatam. This is Bhagavatam. This is the verse from the Bhagavatam. It's not only just about Krishna's pastimes, but it is also about the nature of the material world. One has to understand the both. And to be strong in knowledge. One has to understand a bit how the material world, what the material world is comprising of, how it works, and also, of course, the Krishna's leela. Both has to be there. So, although things are packed very nicely in the material world, and people are in illusion, thinking, oh, everything is nice. They tend to push away anything that is unpleasant. Cover it away. Put a package over. If it's something wrong, fix it up. If it's a cut, cover it over so we don't see it. So in this way, people walk along blind. They're blind to what the reality is. Because of that attachment to material sense gratification, they become blind to all these things, even though they see. That's why when Maharaj Yudhisthira was asked, what is the most amazing thing that you have seen in this world? So the most amazing thing is that I see my father's life, my forefather dies, everyone is dying left and right, but I think I will not die. Although somewhere in our mind we think, yes, you and I, but we don't want to think about it. And the fact is, we arrange our lives in a way that we think we're going to live forever. At least we think that we're going to live for a long, long time. Make so many plans. And we try to give up the body as long as possible. To avoid, in a superficial way, we try to stem the problem of birth, old age, disease and death. Although people, of course, they never thought of birth as some big problem. But at least old age, disease and death, they try to superficially try to stem it. Old age, they'll try to use a lot of creams or pills and potions and lotions and stuff like that just to keep off the ravages of time. Try to keep looking younger as long as possible. Also the way they dress. That's why they say sometimes you have the, when you reach, what is it now, 40 or 50, middle age crisis. That's when the time, they start beginning to freak out that, oh man, I'm getting old. And then they try to feel younger. That is the time also when marriage starts to get shaky. They say, oh, if I get a younger package, then it will make me feel younger. The gray hair here, then. They start to get worried. And they try to do something about it in super artificial way, but they cannot stop it. And whether we like it or not, old age will come. Same thing with disease. Sometimes people may not be sick, but they worry themselves to become sick. They worry so much about being sick that they actually become sick. Is it not, doctor? A lot of the sickness are actually created by the mind. They start worrying. I know, for example, like my mother is always worried that she's sick. When any time she feels a little bit uneasy or whatever, just a sneeze or something, she's worried that she has some big problem. And now to go for expensive medical checkup and this and that. Now the doctor will tell her, it's not much wrong. It's just normal for this age. They worry themselves into getting sick. Anxiety, stress. And so it's sickness they cannot avoid, no matter how hard they try, and of course ultimately there's death. And in different cultures, death is dealt with in a different way. In the Western world, everything is packaged very nicely. So when the relatives come, they come and have a last darshan of the body, their body, they will not become horror-struck. She looks very peaceful. Isn't that normal, the statement? And people come for last darshan, he looks very peaceful. He passed away very peacefully. Nice suit or dress, her favorite dress or his favorite suit. But what happened to that dead body which is nicely dressed in due course of time? If it's burnt, or in India, what do? They decorate very nicely, like with garlands and so many decorations. And then if they are burnt, they become ashes. If they are buried in a coffin in the ground, they become food for the worms and, as I said, minuscule creatures, and they end up become feces. In some culture, the dead body will bring it to a hilltop and just leave it there. I think it's a Parsi. They leave it on the hilltop and they become food for vultures. Right? Parsis do that, right? So at least there's some usefulness for the body, even in death. They feed it to other living beings. So in this way, it always, what doesn't matter. In life, the body may be known as a king, maybe a prince, or beauty queen. It may be a Miss Universe or Miss World, or whatever Miss there may be. But in death, they all end up the same way. You're not going to differentiate between these ashes or that ashes. His feces is feces, ashes is ashes. It's the same. And everything is forgotten. The only memory is just some photos. He was once, she was once so beautiful. He was once the great king sitting on an elephant. He was once so handsome, driving around in his Ferrari or Porsche or whatever. But now, ashes, faces, food for the worms and the vultures and the jackals and dogs. That's what happened. So this is the end result. And it's not at all sublime. It is not at all very inspirational, isn't it, to hear it. This is how the body is going to end up. But that's a fact. So what is important is what one does between birth and death when one is in this body. If one is just attached and think that, my goal in life is to just reach the top of the pile. If one is in a professional career and has the passion and drive, and this is what he wants to do, to reach the top of the pile. Just like Sri Prabhupada, when he went to Japan to see this printer, first all the top executives come and meet him. They have him then show their face, and each one will give their business card on the desk. Then after they left, they was dealing with the junior executive. And Prabhupada asked him, "So what is your goal in life?" All he did was take his card, which was on the bottom, and put it on the top. That was his goal. To reach the top of the pile. To become a top executive in the company where he was working. So if that is the goal in our life, to just become top of the pile, then what is the difference at the end? We just end up like anyone else. The end result is the same. I say it in this verse. Maybe a great king sitting on a powerful elephant or chariot, or being driven around in the Rolls Royce, flying around in your own private plane. It's the same. Most of the time, when people are very successful, as they get older, they become very, very paranoid about this, getting sick, about getting about death, that they're going to lose it all. They become so attached, like this story of Howard Hughes, famous. He was so rich. You heard of Howard Hughes, right? He was the founder of which airline? Was it United Airlines or one of the airlines? He was very rich. But towards the end of his life, he was so paranoid about getting sick. He lived in a house that is completely sanitized. And the food that is prepared comes to him in a tube. And it has to be tested that there is no poison. In the end, he got sick. He got really sick and died on the way to the hospital. Still, they cannot avoid. Even though they may be very, very rich, doesn't matter. Old age, disease, death, this is inevitable. Part and parcel of mature life. I think battery is running out or something. So we cannot avoid, so it's a matter of how to deal with it. Although people deal with it in different ways, they try to find solutions, but all the solutions that they come up with are temporary solutions. All they try to do is just try to slow it down, or try to cosmetically cover the problem so externally it looks good, It's just like old age. Old age is going on. Every day the sunset or the sunrise, we are closer to death. We are one more day closer to death. And of course, people try to put on a positive spin. He said, that is very negative thinking. We should think of, we have lived another day. So whether we live another day or have died another day, the fact is that we are still another day closer to death. So externally, we may try to make ourselves look a little bit younger. The fact is, we're still getting older. It's still getting older. It doesn't matter. So, the important thing is while living in this body, the end result is the same for everyone. But while living, what we do with this body. That's why Prahlad Maharaj is saying, this human form of life, although it's very temporary, it is very, very rare. Because only in this human form of life, one can surrender to Krishna. One can engage in devotional service. It is a rare gift. Because out of so many species of life, 8,400,000 species of life, only 400,000 are human beings. And out of this, only some small amount are more developed human beings. Many of them are very undeveloped. So to have this human form of life is rare. So it's a matter of how we use this rare, although temporary, but rare human form of life. How do we use it? We try to reach the pinnacle of material existence, or we try to use this human form of life to really solve the problems of life. To find the ultimate solution, not just some temporary solution, but to find the ultimate solution. It's just like some people, they're willing to spend thousands of dollars, sometimes thousands of dollars a month on potions or lotions just to look a little bit younger. It's just like once I read an article about this famous actor, Tom Cruise. He spent a few thousand dollars a month just on creams. Can you imagine a few thousand dollars a month just on creams? So they look just a little bit younger. So that is their absorption. That's how they spend their time. But so how do we spend our time? To try to just only spend the time taking care of the body? Or we spend the time trying to find a solution? People spend thousands of dollars to try to solve the problems of birth, old age, disease and death, or at least old age, disease and death. They're willing to do that. And are we willing to put in the effort and pay the price for the ultimate solution? It's just like if someone come up with a pill, with this kind of pill which can solve all your problems of old age and death. I'm sure there are a lot of people willing to pay. And I was amazed. I have a friend. I used to know him from Copenhagen. At that time, he was living in Greenland, Malaysian. And then he moved his family to Australia. So when I came here after a few months, I remembered that he moved to Australia, and maybe it was Melbourne. So I tried to trace him, because he's a Taekwondo grandmaster, one of the only non-Korean grandmaster in Taekwondo. So I checked out Taekwondo and I found someone who is in Sweden who may know him, write to him, and I got his contact and found out he's in Melbourne. So I met up with him a few months ago, and he told me that in the last few years he has developed a technique. He used to treat people with his qigong, right? But he said it was not very effective. It helps a little bit. He'd been practicing qigong for many years. He said, but I now develop a technique with some electrical charge combined with my qigong, it increases the qi like many, many times in the body. And it can cure us a lot of diseases. Even diseases that is incurable, like cancer and stuff. Anything that's caused by pathogens can cure. And it charged 2 million euros for the treatment. And he said here he's getting clients. Imagine someone is so desperate, he paid 2 million euros for the treatment, trying to find a cure, so called incurable cure. And he said, this is how I earn my money. I get clients from around the world. I mean, even if it's 200,000, it's a lot, but 2 million. So people are willing to pay. Now, if we, so let's say if people come up with a cure or a pill that can cure your disease or stop you from death or prolong your life, people, it's just like, I don't know whether it's still popular, but at one time, people were paying a lot of money to be frozen. If they have an incurable disease, they are frozen. So that at the time when they discover the cure for it, they can take them out and give them a cure. But have you ever frozen anything? Like something you put in the freezer? And when you take it out from the freezer, what happens? It rots very fast. Anything that is frozen, if you don't use it immediately, it rots very fast. So people are desperate enough to put their faith in that, those kind of things. So, but here in Bhagavatam, we actually give a solution. No, you cannot stop death, old age, disease, but we can stop the cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death. And are you willing to pay the price? People are willing to pay 2 million euros to try a treatment that supposedly can cure them. So are we willing to pay the price for the ultimate solution to stop this cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death? As long as this body, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for someone who is born, death is certain. That we cannot avoid. At least we get used to the idea, accept the idea. Death is certain. There's no way around that. Old age is certain. Disease is certain. As one gets older, he will become more susceptible to disease. Right, doctor? You can't avoid that. But looking beyond, do we have a solution to stop it on its track after this life? No more birth, death, old age, disease, and to stop the cycle. Of course, people in this world, many of them, they do not believe in an afterlife. They think that this life is all. That's why they're so desperate, hanging on to it. To make the best out of it, hanging on to this life. But for devotee, we understand there's life beyond, or people who understand that there's a life beyond. So they find a long-term solution, not just some stopgap solution, but a long-term solution. Once and for all, finish it up. Accept the fact that it's unavoidable. Always disease and death. We already gone through birth. Old age also, we are progressing in that direction. We get sick, and we will die. So we have to at least accept the fact that it's going to happen one way or the other, sooner or later. But how do we stop it from happening again? That's the question. How do we stop from happening again? That's where the Bhagavatams come in. Giving the solution. Yeah. That when we understand that this, we are actually a spirit soul. It's only this body going through this transformation. The spirit soul is eternal. So when we engage in the eternal activity of the spirit soul, of devotional service, and go back to Godhead, there will be no more birth, old age, disease, and death. That is where we want to go to. That's why sometimes Prabhupada said, in this material, everyone is sick. It's a material disease. It's a sickness. So the temple is like a hospital. Prasadam is a diet. And the chanting is the medicine. Some of the Bhagavatam is the Bhagavatam is also considered also the medicine for this age. So we take this pill. There is a pill that can stop the cycle of birth and death, and that's called Hare Krishna mantra pill. The Hare Krishna. So are we willing to pay that price? The price is not in US dollars or euros or Australian dollars. I think it was Rupa Goswami. He said the price to pay is eagerness, loyalty. You cannot get this Krishna consciousness or Krishna prema. You want by performing pious activities for birth after birth or pious activities. It cannot only be achieved by one thing, and that's loyalty. Intense greed, intense eagerness. And stated that if you find this commodity is so rare and you find it available in the marketplace, you should be so eager to pay any price to get it. I'm sure. I mean, the material is someone comes out with a pill and there's only one pill that can prolong your life or stop death. And it will create a bidding war. They'll put it on eBay or whatever, or an auction. People will be bidding it like mad. You'll go up into the billions. The bidding will go up into billions. People will be very eager to get that pill. And we do have that pill. You say, yes, you already have this body. As long as you have this body, your death is inevitable. But we have a solution that it will not happen again. You have a solution that you won't have to go through it again. You won't have to be squeezed into the womb that is so small and you arch like a poor arrow or bent over. You don't have to be your fragile skin and body be eaten and bitten by worms. You don't have to be squeezed out a hole that's too small. You don't have to go through all these problems again. We have the solution for that. What you've already gone through, now it will happen. That is, forget about it. Just accept it. Just accept that fact. But take the solution. We should prevent it from happening again. So that is real intelligence. Real intelligence. Understanding the inevitable, accept it, and finding a long-term solution to the problems we have. It's just like sometimes in business or whatever, they call it cutting the loss. Right? They may be in a business and they find that it's sinking. Rather than to pump in more money into a sinking ship and it sinks more, they say, okay, just cut the loss. Start all over again. And now I learned my lesson, won't happen, won't make the same mistake. So we cut the loss, except, yes, the problem is going to be there now that I have this material body. I make that mistake. I make the mistake of not taking up Krishna consciousness. I began attracted to the material energy, and I have this body, this package. I bought into this package. Now I have to accept all the privileges or whatever it comes with it, this package. Cut the loss. And now let me buy myself another package. Get on another trip that will not have any of these problems. And they pay the price necessary. The last time I was not willing to pay the price, but now I'm willing to pay the price. So this is proper use of intelligence to look forward and find an ultimate solution. Because there's no solution in this material world, no matter how much people try. The scientists may promise. And they even write, they say, oh, life is, now we have extended the duration of life. But if you take the statistic, is life getting longer? Maybe some people are living longer. But you take the whole population, people are dying, and you do an average on it, the actual duration of life is shortened, has shortened a lot. A lot of young people are dying nowadays. A lot more young people are dying. So, so it doesn't matter. One is attached to this material conception of life, the end result is not very sublime. It's not very beautiful. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind of achievement one has, or what kind of success one has achieved in this life. It all ends up the same way. If one is very successful, he may get a small mention in the history books. But where is he now? Just some ashes, some feces somewhere. Is that a very glorious aim? Where are the great kings of the world? Where are the big powerful businessmen or powerful leaders of society? Where are they now? In fact, Prabhupada once said, when he was in Stockholm, he was talking about one very famous Indian politician. He said he had taken birth as a dog in Stockholm. So one has to be serious. If one is serious about finding a solution to the life, one has to take this Krishna consciousness very seriously and be determined that I'm not going to let this happen again. No more. It's just like sometimes women, they give birth. First time they give birth, it's so excruciatingly painful. There's no backing out once the process is started, and all the water break or whatever. They cannot tell the doctor. I said, doctor, I don't want to go through this. No, they can't, isn't it? They have to go through it. And then after that they say, no more. No more babies. And then it lasted for a few months or a year and two, and said, oh, it would be nice to have another one. That's the problem in this material world. We forget. Maya makes us forget. I remember when I was traveling from Malaysia to Europe, overland, it was such a tough trip. So tough, and I didn't have much money. I had to be very careful how much I spent. By the time I arrived, I was so skinny. I was talking the other day. I was like coming from a concentration camp. And after a while, after I settled down in Germany, and I thought, it was not so bad, actually. Next time I go back to Malaysia, maybe I want to go back that way. You forget the problem, the pain. That's why Bhagavatam is reminding us. It's reminding us, yes, we may be kings sitting on a chariot, but later, by the influence of Krishna's invincible time, we become feces, worms, or ashes. That's the end result. That's the end result of this so-called glorious body. There's nothing wonderful, really, about it. Only wonderful is when we properly engage our body in Krishna service. Then it's glorious. Otherwise, there's nothing glorious about it. It is the same substance like everyone else. Sometimes people that they admire, they adore all these movie stars. So beautiful, so glamorous and all this. They will still go through the same problem. Old age, disease and death. It's just that they have a nicer package. But inside there is the same. The same blood, stool, urine, mucus, spleen, bones. Same substance in life. It's just a nicer package. So Krishna consciousness is the real solution. It gives the real solution to all the problems of life. It stopped the cycle of birth and death. No more. Finish. Bus. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am. He was referring to one very famous Indian politician. So he has taken birth as a dog in Stockholm. Well, Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, I am seated within everyone's heart and from me come knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So some people remember, some people don't remember. It's not like a great blessing to remember your previous birth. Just imagine if you're married and you remember your previous birth. Now you're the husband and in the previous birth you were actually with the wife and your wife was a husband. How are you going to act? You're going to be very freaky. Right? Right? So it's not always a blessing. But we often use these examples of especially children remembering their previous life to just as a proof of reincarnation that they are previous lives. And generally, it's been studied that when they reach a certain age, when they get a little bit older, even before they reach adulthood, they normally start to forget all these things. Although there have been examples of people who remember, even when they are grown up, they still remember. There was a case of this one lady. She was in, I think she lived in Delhi. And she remembered her birth when she was in Mathura. That was the only book ever I read in Swedish. My Swedish is not very good. Somehow I managed to read this book in Swedish and able to follow it through. And he said that she was talking just very funny languages that the family could not figure out what she was talking about. And then they happened to meet this one professor in university and said, this is a dialect that is used in Mathura. And she remembered, and they brought her there, and she was able to remember so many things. And she remembered the promise that her husband made to her when just before she died, that you promised me you'll never marry again. Because that promise was at her deathbed. It was only made to her, and she was the only one around who heard it. You promised me you'll never marry again. But you have remarried. But the most interesting thing actually, most interesting thing I found in that book was as she was dying, she has the opportunity to become liberated. But somehow she was still attached. She could not let go. You know, and she was saying there was a door light, you know, leading out. No more. Material life, but somehow she was attached, so she took birth again. And I found that was really interesting, that part. There's one book especially, he used to have this book, but I lent it out and that person lost it. It's called The 20 Suggestive Cases on Reincarnation, by the he's the authority on children remembering past life. And he gave 20 cases of children who remember past life. And some of these stories are pretty freaky. I mean, it's amazing, this story, just how they remember things that they ordinary, they would not have known. There's no way they could have known about these things. It's considered family secrets. She lived far away, and the kids living far away, and he was able to come and show the people where she used to live. and the children, the whole family, all the family members. She was a small child and she could recognize her husband, her mother-in-law, and her children were all grown up. Went in and cooked her husband's favorite dishes. Revealed the family secret. Then there was another one. One child came, as you grow to a certain age, he went into the parents' bedroom. There was this gun on the wall, and he took it down. And the mother was freaking out. Said, oh, don't leave it, the gun, give it to me. And he said, no, I'm not giving it. Come on, give it to me. And the son said, no, I won't give it to you. This is my gun. I told you I'll come back to get it. And then he remembered that her father-in-law, before he died, he said, I'll come back one day to get my gun. And now the father has become the son. And they say, I told you, I'll come back to get this gun. And he told them, you keep this for me, I'll come back someday to collect it. Freaky, yeah? So you're talking about remembering. Isn't it freaky? You were the father once and now you are finding yourself as a son. How are you going to relate? It's called schizophrenia. You know, sometimes people, they think they are different identity. They can't figure out who they are anymore. They get schizophrenia. So it's, in one sense, it's a blessing to forget.